The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
It's coming. Day 13 at the World Cup. Brave Fabio's brave England reached the last 16 with their first win. And the pod says, shift over, lads. There's room on that Three Lions bandwagon for more. As England head towards their meeting with top pals Germany, USA are surprise Group C winners. Can anything stop the rise of US soccer, apart from televised Scrabble, of course? And how will the team fare against Ghana? Questions. Meantime, Thursday brings us Denmark, Japan, Paraguay, New Zealand, and all the drama, in every sense, of Italy, Slovakia, as the holders battle to stay in the cup or at least get off a shot on goal. The pod previews the action and much, much more in World Cup Daily. Hello, world. On board the pod today, short straws in hand, it's Barney Roney and Tom Lutz of The Guardian. On the way, on the phone, we have Owen Gibson, who's been at the England game, Jeff Carlisle of ESPN.com too, and possibly Lars Eriksson as well, to be TBC. Barney, first off, say something controversial.
No, I'm not going to.
Are those days behind you?
Yeah, that was a...
Were you happy for England today?
Very happy, yeah. They played much better, didn't they? Played like a Premier League team, very vigorous. They had a good spell in the second half. And a bit brittle, but at least they were explosive as they can be, and it was a good performance.
Right, they had a bit more than a good spell in the second half, though, didn't they? I mean, they were far and away the better side.
Yeah, they dominated Slovenia, and that's a good thing. And it made a big difference not having Heskey in the team.
Tom, is this going to be a turning point for brave England?
I think so. Well, at least for one game, it's a turning point. We'll see.
What are you giggling about? Us celebrating them coming second in a group with Algeria, Slovenia and USA?
Yes, might have been the reason I was giggling and setting up a date with Germany. I agree with Barney that they did look fail at the back, and it was kind of back to the frantic defending, which John Terry specialises in, usually because he's made some kind of mistake. But let's not attack them. They have got through to the last 16. I don't want to get all Guardian on it.
No, you're beside yourself with joy. That's so beautiful to see.
There was a great moment where Terry slid in to block that shot using his...
He dived head first.
Yeah. It was brilliant.
Just use your head job.
Yeah, he's very good at that. I mean, yeah, it was good.
Now, witness to all of this at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Port Elizabeth is our very own Owen Gibson, who I think now joins us in the line from some fancy eatery down the road from the stadium. Owen, are you there?
I am indeed. If only it was a fancy eatery.
All right, it's let's credit where credit's due. It's Steers Steakhouse. On a meat-based kind of metaphorical note, Maradona's always saying about sticking some meat on the grill, and England certainly had that at last, didn't they? They'd let the fans go hungry in the opening two games, but not this time, Owen.
Indeed, I think, as already alluded to, I think in comparison to the last two games, anything would have been an improvement. But I mean, Barney's right. They did play like a Premier League side. There was lots of reference to that afterwards from the players and from the manager. You just worry that in previous major tournaments, playing like a Premier League side is what had us knocked out. So when we come against sides with a bit more guile, you maybe hope that they might not play like a Premier League side. But it's enough today, certainly.
Right, it depends as well which Premier League side. Hull City, for example, not such a good idea. Chelsea, perhaps better. Tense 90 minutes, was it there in the stadium?
It was very tense, particularly. I mean, the first 20 minutes, they looked again like they didn't know one another and couldn't pass football. And then off the goal, it got a lot better. And then obviously the last sort of 10, 15 minutes was pretty nervy again because, one slip or one mistake and they would be going out. And but I think, They largely controlled the game. They at least looked like a team. They played at a higher tempo. They pressed the ball a lot better. I mean, all in all, it was a much better performance, but certainly than last Friday. So, I mean, I think, they were a lot better, but a lot further to go before they can think about beating Germany, I think.
Right, OK. Interesting that Wayne Rooney is now providing Heskey with some big competition for the non-scoring striker role. What's the latest on his fitness, though, after he trudged off midway through the second half?
Well, Capello said he should be fine for the next game. He said he'd definitely be fine for the next game. I mean, I think more worryingly, it's just his form in general. I mean, he's not really been the same player since he came back from that injury. For Manchester United, he's not shown anywhere near the same form as he was when he had that incredible, streak last season. And he did look a bit sort of heavy legs again today, a bit disconsolate, even given the fact that England are playing a lot better. You just think without Rooney on top form, we'll find it hard to go too far into the competition. I mean, you just hope that maybe he gets a goal from somewhere and that fires something, but he did look a bit disconsolate when he tweeted off today, even though he did say he had that injury.
I've got an interesting Wayne Rooney stat. He's obviously England's best player, but it's 6 years, 580 minutes of football, and six England goals since he actually contributed or scored a goal for England at a tournament. I mean, obviously he was injured a bit in 2006, 2004 he ended up being injured, but you know he's not really been involved at tournaments for a huge chunk of his fledgling career. In fact, since he moved to Man United, he's not had any influence on England scoring a goal at a tournament. It's just an odd thing, given that we talk about over-reliance on him.
But it's quite hard to quantify, isn't it? Because by his presence on the field, he can distract the opposition, he can make room for...
But then he's turning into Emil Heskey. We're talking about actually scoring a goal and actually contributing to a goal using your feet or your head,
right? Okay.
Rather than being a cumbersome obstacle.
All right. Listen, Owen, what's the narrative now on England? We've had the rebels, we've had the Capello, the squad father narrative. Now is it all back to sweetness and light and brotherhood?
Well, certainly it seems so. You know, in the mix zone after the game, everyone was talking about the fact that, you know, the mood was better than it had been before. And I thought it was very, very instructive, though, that Capello said, I said they could all have a beer but the night before the game. And obviously all the a lot of the newspapers went off the file on that line. Oh, he let the boys relax. They all had a beer the night before the game. And then Frank Lampard wandered through the mix zone and we said to Frank, you know, did apparently Fabio let you all have a beer? And he said, oh, no, yeah, he did offer us. He's offered the opportunity to have a beer, but none of us took him up on it. So none of them actually, when it came to it, they all feared him so much that they wouldn't actually sit down and have a beer the night before the match.
Excellent, Owen. Well, listen, enjoy your well-earned evening, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon as England spiral towards this clash with Germany.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Yes, Capello, he stuck to his guns, didn't he? Stugby22 says England didn't play 4-5-1. They didn't play Gerrard behind Rooney. Joe Cole didn't start, but they still won and gave a much improved performance. Credit to Capello for ignoring most of the fans and so-called expert journalists. Yeah, and tell you what, credit while credit's due. We make jokes about John Terry, but he was very impressive, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was good. I mean, Slovenia play with two big, strong forwards who aren't necessarily the most mobile, so it was kind of, I think, suited to his game.
That's the kind of game he wants to play, is where he has to charge about and throw himself about. If it's a game where he requires a bit more guile, he might be in a bit more trouble.
Also, I don't think we can write off the idea that England should shift formations just because they've beaten Slovenia 1-0. I mean, we're talking about going further on in the competition. I'm sure they would have also beaten Slovenia with a slightly different formation, and it might have been good preparation for later in the tournament.
Yeah, somebody who knows a lot more about tactics than I do said the reason that England got by okay in this game, or actually looked good in this game, is that for once we weren't being dominated in midfield because the opposition were also playing 4-4-2. When we come up against a Germany side that, I mean, certainly today was playing effectively with one up top, that problem would re-emerge. So it's not necessarily a question of what England has done, it was also the nature of the opposition.
I think what England have lost is, in the glory days of Capello's reign, they were beginning to learn to keep the football and slow down play like people say that the top international sides do. And they lost that. The first time I noticed them losing it was in the friendly against Egypt. They couldn't retain possession earlier this season. And that's actually when for me, their form started to go downhill. But that's still something that Capello needs to address, I think.
And fast, Tom.
They do lack a bit of mobility right in the middle of midfield with Lampard and Barry. I mean, they're not the most fleet-footed players together. I mean, obviously, get up and down.
Neither of them had a particularly good game, I think.
No, they're quite, you know, they're fairly kind of stodgy as a pair. You wouldn't say, wow, amazing legs in there. And if they're up against, I suppose...
They've got good engines on them, I think, is the accepted part.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they have got good engines, but whether they've got World Cup-winning engines, if you're up against a really energetic midfield.
Right.
One reason to be cheerful was the crossing was a lot better today. I think mainly because Milner was there.
Well, you say that, Tom, and I would have said exactly the same thing, but I've been disabused of that notion by a quick look at Optostats.
Well, what do Opta know?
All right, Optostats say that James Milner crossed eight times and only one of them found the target, which was for the goal.
Good cross.
It was a fantastic cross.
The point was he had a really good spell of crossing. Yeah. He had about 15 minutes where he suddenly just got it right, and England looked really dangerous. And it reminded you of what David Beckham used to do. It was incredibly simple, just not attempting to beat his man every time, just putting a simple cross in. And people used to get frustrated with how Hardy Beckham was rated because he did something very simple very well. And Milner was great.
Yeah, excellent. Well, England cheering wildly at the end and celebrating, and Slovenia too in their way, thought they were through, but then the news came through and the heartbreaking scenes of Matthijs Kek there, the Slovenia manager, being informed that the USA had scored that late winner, Landon Donovan, against Algeria, and thus USA and not Slovenia were going through. Absolutely huge goal this for the States, and it's hard not to feel glad for them, because it would have been a bit of an injustice for USA not to go through, given that the way they missed out on the 3 points against Slovenia, and given indeed the way that the American public has, by all accounts, embraced Team USA in this tournament. To talk more about that, let's see now if we have Jeff Carlisle of ESPN.com on the line from South Africa. Jeff, what an emotional ending.
Yeah, it was really quite unbelievable. The United States went from being out of the tournament to topping the group. And certainly Landon Donovan was Johnny on the spot to ram home Clint Dempsey's rebound shots. And it's really quite a sight. Actually, Landon Donovan broke down a little bit at the post-game press conference, got a little choked up, and that's how much that goal meant to him and how big a goal it was for the United States.
Well, how big a goal was it? Because it's not just going through. I mean, you've talked about the fact that you think that this tournament possibly represents the seminal moment in the development of soccer in the States, the moment that it really breaks into the mainstream, that this World Cup has done what David Beckham hasn't been able to do, what the USA 94 wasn't able to do.
You can't skip any steps. Certainly, granted, I mean, USA 94 maybe didn't bring soccer, you know, it didn't make it as big as baseball or American football or basketball, you know, but it did launch MLS, and that was an important growth step for the game in this country. And I think this game will bring in a lot of new fans. It will bring a lot of attention in a good way for the game. You know, usually the press is very quick to pounce on the sport and kind of deride it. But this time it's going to get attention for all the right reasons, and we'll see how big it is, but I think it could be a big moment.
But you've been successful in the World Cup before. Why this time is it getting a more positive response?
Well, I just think now there's been more television coverage than ever before. There's been more media coverage than ever before. Certainly, I think the internet has played a huge role in just fanning the flames of fan support for the game and for MLS. And a lot of people have played the game in the United States. People forget that the U.S. has so many registered youth players. A lot of people have played the game. So I think the fans in the country are really able to appreciate the game now on a level that's never been seen before. So I think that all plays a part.
Okay. And you faced Ghana then in the last 16. Is that a tie that's going to excite the American public?
I think any tie would excite the American public at this point after that game. I think people are going to be excited. They're going to be watching. Certainly, I think Germany would have been a more high-profile matchup, but the fact that Ghana put the U.S. out of the tournament basically in 2006, you know, I think a lot will be made of that, and I think that will do plenty to generate interest. And just the fact that the team won in such dramatic fashion, Americans love winners no matter the sport, so the fact that they're able to pull off the victory in this game will give it a lot of attention, and there'll be plenty of build-up for it.
Wild celebrations for the Americans, and what a thrilling end to the game that was. In the meantime, Barney, the ideal opportunity for you to tell us all about Australia-Serbia. Were these Serbians robbed?
Well, perhaps. I mean, it was a strange game. Australia
caught fire in the second half.
It did, yeah. Australia were terrible in the first half. They looked really old and slow and not interested. And Serbia looked very good. They've got a very good left winger, Jovanovic, who might be going to Liverpool. They looked really good. But they just couldn't score. And then Australia were transformed in the second half, and Serbia kind of wilted. They just started getting really stuck in and pressing the ball and really I mean, it was almost as though they were afraid of getting someone sent off in the first half, because that seems to be what's happening.
And then time was running out, because they were both battling to get this last 16 place.
And the last 15 minutes were kind of dizzyingly confusing, as I found out on my minute by minute. towards the end, Serbia needed a goal to go through. And there was an alleged handball by Tim Cahill, which would have been a penalty.
How ironic.
And they were very unhappy about it at the end. And but they, you know, they both played very well in the end. And I say Cahill's goal, which was a header from about the penalty spot, was superb.
Was it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
To Australia.
Well, while all that was going on, Germany and Ghana were battling not to face England in the other Group D game. And blimey, it was very eventful. Ghana probably had more chances to win the game, but they didn't. Mesut Özil finally scored for Germany, and through they go as group winners, which means that they will be taking on England.
It's a really hard game, isn't it, for England?
What, the Germany one?
Yeah, I mean, Germany, so far, when they've been good, they've sort of looked like a really good version of England.
Even when they lost, they looked pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, they're very, very fit and athletic and direct. They know exactly what they're doing, how they want to play. And, you know, they are a good team.
Mm. I think they've got the same kind of frailties at the back as England. If you attack them, they do start to panic a bit. I don't know whether that's because they're such a young team. I think it's 24 is the average age of their squad. England's is, 29? So England have got the experience over them. And I think people have still got this hangover that the Germans are this horribly organised, efficient machine. I just used efficient and German in the same sentence, but I was mocking it. But they're not anymore. They're much like the 2016. They're this young bucks who just run around. And
England beat them last year as well. I think it was last year, with two goals from centre backs from corners, which was a shoddy-ish marking. And England, it was a team with Stuart Downing and Sean Wright Phillips in it. It was under strength, and I think it was one of their best performances. It was in a friendly, but a really good performance.
I think England will win. I think they'll,
really?
Yeah, I think they'll
All right, well, let's take a quick look at the likely playing combinations in the last 16. We know that USA and Ghana are going to play, and Uruguay are taking on South Korea, with the winners of those two games playing each other.
Christ, so one of them's going to be in the semi-final?
Yeah.
In the semi-final?
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Well, that's what everyone said. England have an easy route to the semi-final, but by not finishing top in the group, we're now out of that, or England are now out of that. Instead, we're in this little happy combination, Argentina and Mexico and Germany and England. So if England do get past Germany, they get Argentina or Mexico. Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily going to be Argentina.
You think Mexico can beat Argentina?
Well, I think Argentina have got a mishap written all over them, but somewhere along the line it's going to be difficult for them and someone will have a chance to beat them.
That may say perhaps called Gutierrez, I think.
Well, they've got a few, you know, a few weaknesses, and I think the manager, as much as he's a strength, could also be a weakness at some point. Although, you know, a lot of people say he's not actually doing a lot of the managing, he's merely a cheerleader and he has his tactical genius there on the bench next to him. But I mean, someone will give them a proper game at some point, and Mexico are a good team.
If you say so. Okay, assuming that the favourites win the remaining group games, which is obviously a dangerous thing to do, the knockout stages could look something like this. Paraguay against Denmark and Portugal against Chile, with the winners of those two games playing each other. The other semi-final place being Holland against Italy against the winners of Brazil versus Spain.
Wow.
Wow indeed.
Mm. It's where the draw's weighted, isn't it? It's where the favourites are waiting.
It certainly is, certainly is. All very thrilling. Well, we'll be taking a look in a second or two at what awaits in Thursday's decisive final group games. First, though, a post. Please mention me, Jimbo. I certainly shall, PMMJ. Not only did you point out that there are four Torreses and not three, as we said yesterday, that's Mexico, Spain, Paraguay and USA, but you also resolve one of the big, big questions of this World Cup. What the line is in our World Cup ditty that comes just before. We'll love it if you score a goal like this.
World Cup, every 4 years is the World Cup, World Cup.
If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
Domino asks, what is the line? Happy Goth suggests, if you don't pick up a grocer in the build-up, then we'll love you when you score a goal. Would have been lovely, but it's not that, sadly. It is, if you don't pick up a groin strain in the build-up. There you go, Tom. Yeah. Barney, there you are. Mm-hmm. Eastern 14. There hasn't been a lot of discussion of the five South American teams as a group. I think there has. I beg to differ, Eastern 14. But you do make the point that could this regional strength help explain Argentina's troubles in qualifying and how they're suddenly looking a lot better now? That is true, actually.
Potentially, yeah. As Maradona pointed out, Ecuador, also an excellent team. Yeah. Could have been there.
Yeah, indeed.
I also do think that football generally suits the way South American teams tend to play and Southern European teams.
What,
generally.
Cup football? Or football?
The way football is now, the way FIFA wants the game to be played.
What?
The way the rules are. You're penalised for conceding and attempting to aggressively regain possession. The game is much more about possession now and about being comfortable on the ball rather than physically strong. Hence, no more Norways at World Cups.
Yeah.
And hence England's problems, but perhaps.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting viewpoint. Well, it's a debate that's going to run and run. In the meantime, Thursday will perhaps give us more evidence one way or the other as groups E and F bring us some pretty exciting games. I'm looking at you, Slovakia, Italy. The Italians, it's fair to say, have pretty much lost all hope, I think, with their first two games. I mean, they know they could go through, but for what? But I'm generalising a bit. But
at this point, aren't we supposed to say, well, you know, they always start slowly? And then...
Well, they do, but I think the thing is that they just don't see a Paolo Rossi in this group. They don't see anyone who's really going to turn it on, also because it looks like, once again, Lippi's going to go with Gilardino as his central striker. Although the papers are full of talk that it's going to be 4-3-3, with Gattuso coming in to add a bit of bite to the midfield, and possibly Di Natale taking up his station on the left wing. They need to win, do the Azzurri. It'd be helpful if they actually managed to at least score a goal or two. They haven't had a single win this year since the turn of the year.
Mm. What? They haven't had like a France-style meltdown yet. You don't see that kind of on the cards.
No, they're not a super talented team that can't get on. They're just a team that is lacking a spark. And Lippi seems to be going bonkers on the training ground, but he's just shouting at them, "Score a goal! I want people to run into the box." And it's just not a side that has much fire to it. And it's been, of course, hampered by injuries. And Buffon, as yet, hasn't played a part because Marchetti barely had to do anything. Just that one goal that Cannavaro really contributed to by New Zealand. And Pirlo, though. But now Pirlo's being talked up in much the same way that your Gareth Barry or your Joe Cole was for England. And more so because he's a bit more of a fundamental player. But I don't know that at his age and coming off an injury the way he is, that he's actually going to walk into the side and make that much difference. Because it's so long since he's played up in the part of the pitch where Italy really needs some invention, i.e. just behind the strikers, that, I don't think it's going to... And Montolivo's been doing a terrific job, I think.
He sort of relies on people making very subtle runs.
Who, Montolivo?
Pirlo.
Oh, right, yeah.
And is anyone doing that?
Subtle runs?
Mm.
Well, Italy, insofar as I understand your question, Italy are actually looking quite good in their progression upfield. It's just the final third where it all goes very, very, very sterile. But there you go. Anyway, they should beat Slovakia. They should go through. And it's almost impossible for them to win the group. So that means they're going to be taking on, you'd think, Holland in the next round. And that'll be interesting. New Zealand, meantime, are facing Paraguay. If New Zealand could pull off the biggest shock of all and beat Paraguay, then yeah, maybe Italy could get top of the group. But hey, what about those plucky Kiwis?
I think it's important that they don't try and, as bad as it sounds, play too much against Paraguay and just stick to their game plan of just trying to batter the opposition. So if they get ideas above their station, I think that's where they're going to fall down. And we've gone on about team spirit and in this World Cup, and I think New Zealand have gained that partly because they have got this core of players who play with each other in the Australian League, but at Wellington Phoenix. And I think that's kind of helped them understand each other, so you haven't got these disparate players coming in.
I don't think having disparate players scattered around the world is really a problem. If you look at the South American teams, I mean, their players are on many... It's almost a kind of a good thing. I mean, international football is a kind of concept, isn't it? You carry it around with you, and when you get together...
I think it's fine if you're a really good side, but if you're New Zealand, then I think it pays that.
Yeah. Colin Beacott was pointing out that they have to basically get a big plane and fly all around the world picking up players as they go for their game. So it's a pretty disparate
bunch.
They've
got a hoist to do that.
I don't know how it works, but... Yeah.
They're very tough in New Zealand. They've got a very good kit as well, haven't they? I like the kit.
I like the Slovenia kit. It looks like it's kind of like an old-style Dennis the Menace Beano jumper thing. Mm. Yeah. Germany kit, says producer Ben. He likes that kind of black.
It's nice. Yeah, I like the black one tonight. It was good.
Right. Jürgen Löw, though, for me, he's going down this kind of fashion trajectory. It started off with him being this kind of interesting maverick metrosexual figure on the sideline, very much a unique man in the world of football management. But increasingly, he looks like the man from the Secret Services who is going to take you away at 2 a.m. Meantime, Group E, listeners, you will recall that the Netherlands are top and already through. They're followed by Japan and Denmark, who are tied on points, but Japan are two better off in the goal difference department. Cameroon already out. Now, Cameroon are taking on Netherlands, and I mean, this is largely about whether Arjen Robben can come back in and get a bit of match fitness there. The other game's a really big one, Denmark against Japan, head-to-head. Who can get that second place in the last 16? And to save on phone bills, we decided to get the Danish point of view. And joining us now on the line is Lars Eriksson. Lars, hello.
Hello there, James. How are you doing?
Hello. I say on the line, and you are quite literally, because you're in a train.
Indeed, I am.
And that. Away with these niceties. Let's hear about Denmark and their chances against Japan. After the first game, I hear that the country, Denmark, was gripped by fear that your team might have become as dull as, gasp, your neighbours, Norway. But the second game has allayed your fears?
Well, I think, you know, 15 minutes into the second game, the obituaries were still being written. And then somehow, through Simon Kjær's unbelievable crossfield pass, it somehow unlocked them. You know, spurred something under the Danish team. They went on to produce a really fine performance. And they really put me to shame, because I wrote a piece that morning saying that the only strong suit in the Danish team was their defence, and they had nothing going on up front. And actually, it was completely topsy-turvy, because the opposite happened. And it has really changed the mood in the country from being quite sort of, it's almost a sense of apathy before the World Cup that this team was not going to accomplish anything. They didn't have the players for it, and it doesn't take much to turn the mood around. And then there's really optimistic attitude for the game tomorrow, and a certain belief that with our experience in what it's only our fourth World Cup, but we have sort of a 100% record going through from the stages. So I think we'll pull this one through.
All right. I think everyone, well, not everyone, but lots of people would love to see the Danish team making a bit of a run in the tournament, especially if it involved that fine counter-attacking play like we saw from Bentner and Romedal. The only worrying thing, though, is, as you say, Simon Kjær was so crucial in that, and he's going to be missing tomorrow.
Well, it is. I mean, I think we've got a fairly good backup in Pierre Kolderup. I mean, most Everton fans probably won't agree, but he's a solid replacement. And I think of all the three group games, this is one that we'd prefer to miss out on for Simon Kjær. I mean, he was doubtful coming into the tournament with a potential injury that could have kept him out. So I think defensively, we had huge problems against both Holland and Cameroon, but again, I think we should square off quite nicely against Japan tomorrow. And the key is that whether the wingers can produce something, and whether the aerial threat of Bentner and potentially Søren Larsen coming off the bench will be enough to see off Japan.
Is Bentner going to be fit, Lars?
Well, this has sort of been an ongoing game since the World Cup started. Some people called it Olsen's big bluff when he sort of, said he was going to be out for the first game. The latest is that he's still doubtful, and there'll be a decision made tomorrow. The only thing that's certain is that Daniel Jensen is out, so it's highly likely, and I think Bentner will start, that the starting lineup will not change significantly from the Cameroon game. The only change will be, obviously, Kolderup coming in instead of Simon Kjær.
Right.
So you got a Danish team with an average very close to 30, which will probably be the oldest team in this World Cup so far.
Wow, okay. Well, if you do get past Japan, though, Lars, it's got to be exciting your side of the draw. You're probably going to be taking on Paraguay. If you win that, you get either Portugal or Chile. It's the easier side of the draw, you know. This Denmark team could go quite a long way.
Well, that is certainly what people are thinking. Well, they don't really dare to say it out loud at the moment.
Whoops.
But we obviously had, two run-ins with Portugal in the qualifiers and came out pretty well in the first one, which was an absolute shock, beating Portugal away. And they sort of outplayed us a bit back home in Copenhagen. But as you say, it's a fairly lucky draw if we manage to pull through tomorrow.
All right, brilliant. Lars, listen, best of luck and enjoy the game with Rob Smythe in Brighton.
Well, no, actually, we will be in London, but the reason we come over is that Rob has promised that he will turn up in a pair of 1986 vintage Denmark pinstripe shorts, so that's a sight for sore eyes that I don't want to miss out on.
Wow. Take pictures and post them, please, Lars.
We certainly will do.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us, Lars.
No problem. Thank you.
Producer Ben says, if Japan had a Prius up front instead of a Honda, would that make them unstoppable, given the Prius's problems with brakes earlier this year? It was topical.
Racist, yeah.
It's not racist, it's, you know...
It's not racist.
No, it's just kind of... it's harping on about an unfortunate bit of industrial... inadequacy. Anyway, there you go. That high point is where we leave today's World Cup Daily. We are going to be back with a roundup of Groups E and F, and a look forward to whatever letters are left over for Friday's action in that show around the same time tomorrow. So do try and join us for that. In the meantime, many, many thanks to producer Ben and to Barney Rone and to Tom Lutz. And you, the listener, speak to you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.